It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy and Alex and Renee are here. We'll talk about the latest Mac news, the Apple-Samsung lawsuit. It's over for now. Should it be over forever? What's going on with the iWatch and the Apple TV? And what we're going to see at WWDC, our predictions. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 401, recorded May 6th, 2014. Eat the paperwork. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, or other Apple product is worth at gazelle.com. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free 2-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code MACBREAK. And by 99designs, the world's largest graphic design marketplace. 99designs connects businesses seeking quality, affordable designs with a community of almost 300,000 graphic designers. Visit 99designs.com/MBW to receive a free power pack upgrade valued at $99. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show that covers weekly your Mac break. And every week, we're here with Mr. What? Alex Lindsay.
Again.
So
I sneak up on him.
He's in town once more. Hi, Alex. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
It was nice because you were here when Pamplemousse was here on Sunday. Or Saturday. They fell in love with you. In fact, they sent us an email saying, forget you guys. Who is that guy we talked to next door with the green screen and the mocap? Oh, he's got.
Well, I have to admit, I thought they were coming in on Wednesday, on Monday.
Surprised them.
And so I was at home, and the only reason that I came in was because I looked over and Lisa had posted something on G Plus and pictures.
Whoa.
I was like, and I came in. Obviously, I was very scruffy when I showed up.
Oh, but
they
were happy to talk to you, so it was a good thing you came in.
They're great, and I think they'll be a lot of fun. It'll be a lot.
I'll explain that in a second. But first, the rest of the crew: Rene Ritchie from iMore.com in beautiful Montreal, where his X-Men comic has pushed iCEO to the background. It looks like Steve's like, let me in. Over on the left.
He's just chilling. It's dark in there. He's having a nap.
Hey, I'm back here. Hey, behind the iPhone. Hey, it's me, Steve.
Mylar snuggie, but not boarded and not graded.
And there with Obi-Wan Kenobi, ladies and gentlemen.
No. That's Obi-Bob Kenobi.
Obi-Bob, the new one.
As Obi-Wan.
Oh, wait, Bob Newhart is Obi-Wan.
Yes.
Okay.
You didn't see. He was on. he was on Big Bang Theory. Last week,
Okay, forgive me, Bob. He's still alive.
Yes. He is. Good heavens!
He is. Okay, forgive me, Bob.
Not only is Bob Newhart still alive, but he is still Bob Newhart, Leo.
Wow.
Were that any of us at any age could make that claim.
You know, I want to now watch Big Bang Theory so I could see Bob Newhart as Obi-Wan. That's great. I like it. So, oh my God, iOS 7 doesn't encrypt email attachments.
Ish.
Renee, you posted the calm down everybody post. So why don't you explain this?
It seems to be happening more and more often lately. Is there's a security story and no one bothers to read it. And then they post really, really scary things to get people afraid. So we looked into it. We did the best we could to find out about it. I actually got a chance to speak to someone from Apple and got a comment on it. And it turns out that, yes, there is a problem with email attachment encryption on the iPhone, but it only affects people who are using an iPhone 4 currently, because the other versions of iOS can't be jailbroken. And you need to be able to get past someone's passcode to use this bug.
So you'd have to have physical access to the device.
Yes, prolonged physical access. You have to use jailbreak tools to get into it. You have to be able to get into the file system and then pull out the email attachments. If there's no passcode, of course, you can just launch mail.app. I mean, there's no need to use any exploit. So once again, always use your passcode. But because the iPhone 4 is the only one with a physical hardware jailbreak, you can get past that on anything, including iOS 7.1.1. There's no jailbreak for the iPhone 4S, 5, 5S, on iOS 7.1.1. So you're safe if you've got a passcode or password or Touch ID enabled.
Okay, so nothing to worry about. I mean, you know, there. I think we need a grading system on exploits.
Like a DEFCON system?
Yeah, yes, that's a good idea.
Ooh.
So this one's on a scale of 0 to 5, this is DEFCON 1.
Other way. One is a really, really bad
one. Oh, God. Yeah, and this is DEFCON.
I don't think there's 0. There's just 1. And
okay,
1 means
1 to 5. Once we're at war. See, I didn't watch war games closely enough, apparently. All right. So this is a DEFCON 4. It's not a 5, which would be everybody relax.
If you have an iPhone 4 and someone manages to get physical possession of it, they can get to your email attachments. That's the worst case scenario. The best case scenario is you have iPhone 4S or higher, and you have a passcode, and you are perfectly safe. As long as you're on iOS 7.1.1.
And they'll fix it.
Yes, Apple is working on a fix now. I mean, some people were upset they haven't fixed it already.
When did they break it?
It was broken in iOS 7. It was reported previously. I don't have any direct knowledge of it, but my understanding is that there is, of course, a priority list of bugs. Like, go to fail is very high priority.
Okay, here we go. DEFCON 5, fade out, lowest state of readiness, normal readiness, blue. DEFCON 4, double take. Whoa! Increased intelligence watch and strengthened security measures above normal readiness. It's really a DEFCON 4.5.
I think we generally hang... I think that we are always at DEFCON 4. Or almost always.
Oh, now we're going to get into a national... No, go back to it, because I want... We're at 5.
Currently at 5. Yes.
Wow.
Who's
even
that?
With all the stuff in Ukraine?
That webpage is not inspiring.
It's number one when you Google DEFCON, so I'd like to think that it...
It was designed in right about the time of war games, I think.
Probably. do you want your radiations reports? Here's the radiations reports if you need them.
Oh, it's got weather, too, so you know whether the missiles are going to deal with turbulence.
You know what? This is for this. Wait, okay. So, all right. Very nice. So, DEFCON 3 roundhouse, that means that's a punch, right? Exercise term roundhouse. Increase in force readiness above that required for normal readiness. Air Force ready to mobilize in 15 minutes. DEFCON 2, fast pace. Are those code names?
Exercise item term.
Yeah, but I understand, but why? Well, like, are we exercising?
I think that's like the internal.
Oh, it's the term. If it's an exercise, it would be not DEFCON 2, but fast pace. Next step to nuclear war. Armed forces ready to deploy and engage in less than 6 hours. DEFCON 1, cocked pistol. Nuclear war is imminent. Well, that's good. I said DEFCON 1, and I meant DEFCON 4.8, I think. Can you do points?
Yeah.
It seems like such a...
The Swedish judge says DEFCON 6.
Okay.
It is a security exploit. Apple has to fix it, but it's relatively... Yeah. It's not low priority, but it's not the highest priority.
No. Here's another number, $68 million. That's what Angela Ahrens gets, the new chief of retail at Apple. Stock grants worth $68 million today, although with the way Apple stock's been going up, could be worth more tomorrow.
Not bad. Well played.
113,334 restricted stock units. That's nice when you get a job and they give you money before you do anything.
More than John Browett.
Well, she does. I think she has to stay with a company for...
They don't vest till 2018.
Right, so she's...
You give them
at the beginning, so they stay for 4 years.
Browlett got only $60 million when he was hired. That was the predecessor. But he was hired in 2012. He didn't make it, so I bet he didn't invest it.
Nope.
Well, now wait a minute, because he was let go, right?
Golden parachute, Leo?
Yeah, I'm thinking golden parachute. It's called golden handcuffs until you're fired. Then it's a golden parachute.
It's an exercise term.
It was a really, really heavy golden handcuff. That's all I can say. $68 million.
What happened to your hair? What is going on with
your hair? Top was down on the way here, and I just haven't been able to calm it down again. So that's what happened. So I have this crazy. I look crazy.
Top was down on
my convertible.
Your convertible. What kind of car?
I have an old. I have a very old BMW.
He has to say old because otherwise
I do. I don't want to.
I'm a Beamer.
Yeah. No, I have a 2005 Beamer. And I, you know, my kids love me to take them to school in the convertible with the top down. That's like their
look,
big.
You should see how they look. You should see the other guy.
Well, no, usually then I get all cleaned up. But on the way here, the top was down. I was like, you know what?
Leave it.
What do you think?
Leave it.
It's my crazy look.
I love it.
Enjoy it. By the next Mac break, it'll all be short again. It's the time. You know what happens? Like,
Aaron's was hired from Burberry, where she was CEO. So you got to give her a little.
She's
money.
Pretty amazing.
And as somebody like, pointed out,
actually dealt with her a lot.
You have?
Well, she used to do a lot of Salesforce events. So,
Know Angela. I'm sorry, Dame Angela.
Yeah. So she, she's a pretty cool person. So, it was a very, very, very good hire on their part. They basically built up Burberry the way it is, and it's become quite a brand. So
retail is so important to
Apple.
Super
smart, and she really understands the next generation of retail. I mean, that's what they really, really responsive, very techy. So it was definitely a much better mix for what Apple does. So it's a nuanced and high end view of retail.
Company themselves said this isn't your father's head of retail.
Yeah,
this is a newly created executive level position.
It retail is online and retail.
It's so this stuff's so important to Apple at this point that it is really you're up there. You're in the stratosphere.
I think Ben Thompson pointed out that being head of retail is the closest there is to being like a president or a CEO at Apple.
Yeah, that's who it was. I was trying to remember, Mr. Stratechery.
One of the bigger questions is going to be, though, what is Apple trying to pick up crumbs they think they were missing earlier, or are they just going to stay the course as they're doing right now?
Well, like, that's the interesting thing, because Ben pointed out same store sales were down 5% last quarter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And have been hovering at zero growth for several quarters. So I don't know if that's Apple decline or retail decline, but that's not good. Because they have opened a lot of new stores, 19, but they have 19 stores in Japan, China, and Hong Kong. And that's not as many, Ben says, as they ought to have.
They weren't directionless, but they didn't have a head of retail for, even if you include Browett, for a couple of years since Ron Johnson left. So it's important to have someone with a vision in there, not just implementing the same policies over and over again.
I mean, I still think they hold the record for they make the most amount of money per square foot for a retailer in the world. I believe that's the stat for an Apple store. My biggest problem with Apple stores is that even with all the stuff that they've done, I still go to buy an iPhone and I end up waiting 45 minutes to talk to somebody about it. And all I want to do is walk in and buy it. And it's not during like the lines or anything else. It's just a process.
Do you press the button on the iPad that says representative, Alex?
Is there a button on the iPad that says representative?
Yes.
You also take advantage of the fact that those are big, thick, heavy tables. So if you want, you can climb up right at the top there and shout, "Do you know who I am?"
I worked on Star Wars. She is famous for taking Burberry and making it a somewhat of a stylish brand. Do you think, she doesn't need to do that.
No, but that's a useful skill. If you're bringing in the ability to understand how to best serve people who are already very well disposed to give this company your money, that's not the same challenge as trying to convince somebody who can buy their snow tires at pretty much any depot anywhere to pick your place instead of the rest. Like Alex said, I've had that same experience too at Apple stores, where the one thing that could even claim as a negative experience is having to wait a long, long time to do something very, very simple, simply because it has become sort of like a clubhouse, combination between a clubhouse and an embassy.
Well, and I think that what she understands, I mean, what Burberry really built on was the brand. I mean, the idea of Burberry, the idea of, in much in the same way that Apple builds on that. So I think understanding that high-end brand, that high-end mentality, I think is something that their last head of retail did not understand at all. So I think that because he came from a discount electronics store that really is horrible if you've ever been to.
Browett was from Britain.
Dixon's or whatever, Dixon's. Isn't it? Wasn't it Dixon's?
Oh. Yep.
Just with, they still sell VGA monitors.
And his predecessor, though, Ron Swanson, Johnson,
those tables were very well made.
Went to Penny's, I believe.
Was it Kmart or
J.C. Penney's?
And then tried to make that upscale and then ended up getting,
The thing with Burberry's is they're also very successful, I believe, in penetrating the Asian market with retail, which is something Apple really wants to do.
See, that's there now. You're kicking it. It's not the, it got all trendy. It's they got into Asia. Look at this graph. This is to the point of two points that Apple retail has to solve. One, they have to penetrate new markets, and they have to penetrate lower end markets. This is Facebook. This is a weird graph, so let me explain it. Facebook monthly active users by platform, Android or iOS. Android is black, iOS
is light gray. Greenwich, Connecticut, 20% Android, 80% iOS in Greenwich. And I bet they wear a lot of Burberry, too, there. San Francisco, well, now it's twice that, 40% Android. New York City, 45%. Total USA, about 45%. Detroit, okay, 58%. Global, eh, a little over 60%. India, 92% Android. It's a tiny little sliver of iOS. Now, that's just Facebook, but I think that's probably pretty close to the overall mobile usage. And so it shows you that while iPhone does great amongst our core cohorts in the Silicon Valley, in Montreal, in Boston, less so in the U.S. total, even less so in poorer parts of the U.S., and really less so globally.
So the global thing is important.
This is an opportunity as well as a challenge.
It's important to remember, though, with the global stat, like in countries like India, the cell phone market is abysmal. The government does not allow a lot of competition there. Getting a cheap phone is really important, but some phones are sold only with a Facebook plan. So you can get, just like you could usually get a BBM plan in the old days, you can buy a phone whose only service for a few pennies is Facebook access.
Wow, that's cool.
And that super cheap Android phone will have astronomical Facebook usage in that market.
Sure.
Facebook's so this stuff still needs segmentation before it's really useful.
Okay.
Yeah. Exactly what Renee said. Also, Facebook's been working very, very hard to make those plans very, very easy for a local telco to implement and enforce.
So, do you not think that Apple needs to do that too?
I think they need to. They need to be a global company. They need to be a force in every single country in which they're capable of operating. However, their only limitation is that they have emphatically produced a product line that is not inclined towards making cheap stuff. And sometimes cheap means flimsy, plastic, you know, floats on water, that sort of stuff. And sometimes it just means that affordable to a widest range of people. The reason why they've got so many hundreds of billions of dollars to have pillow fights with in the commissary every Tuesday afternoon is that they are going for the high-end, high-markup people. And that I think that unless they were to change that strategy and change their thinking in a fundamental way, I think they have to be resigned to the fact that there's going to be markets that they're just never going to reach, which is fine because, again, this is so profitable for them that they can continue to manufacture their own destiny, which is not something that most companies get to do these days.
I mean, yeah, and you look at, I mean, there are definitely car companies that are not trying to reach India. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you know, so that
right,
people have
got
to decide.
Tatas.
Right, people have to decide what they can.
They're not big tatas, they're little tatas.
I wasn't going to go down that path.
Isn't that the number one?
Is
that not the car of choice?
They're called tut-tuts.
It is the car of choice.
When you first said it, I was going to go down there, and I was like, I'm going to pause and then off we
can't
off,
drive
over the
big
cliff
tatas down the streets of most of these cities in India.
Not yet.
You need...
It's important to have a small tata.
Tatas.
They're not called tatas.
No, the tata is the brand name.
Tauntaun.
No, we're not talking about those.
Okay.
No, those are tatas. I'm talking about the largest Indian automobile manufacturer, Tata Motors.
Oh, I've learned so. Today I learned.
Today you learned about tatas. Well, mark that in your book.
Bit Gravity, for instance, is owned by Tata.
Wait a minute. Our Bit Gravity is owned by Tata Motors.
Yep,
I love Tata.
Not Tata Motors, but Tata.
I think Tata's. I've been a Tata fan since
your entire life.
So if you were to go into like your server room, would there be like 100 students clinging to the side of every single server?
Yeah.
Or is that just a regional thing?
Yeah. By the way, they own Jaguar and Land Rover.
They're kind of like Samsung in a way that, like, outside of there, I think they have a lot of, not just Tata Motors, but Tata makes all kinds of stuff. I mean, it's like one of those giant.
Their newest utility vehicle is the Tata Nano.
Mm-hmm.
Small.
Familiar branding.
Yes. Small Tatas, I'm telling you. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we are going to take questions from the audience. And our question engine is at bit.ly, bit.ly. That's the shortener we're using. That's not our server. It's bit.ly/MBW401.
It's actually, today it's for MB401 because someone already took MBW.
Who would do that?
Exactly.
Show across the street.
I went there to find them, to troll them, but they...
MB401.
That's correct.
And so when you go there, you could watch the stream there because Alex has very kindly put the stream. But if you're already watching the stream, please don't open another stream because that would be
You can also, if you're there and you don't want to have a stream in a stream, you can also just, you can pop out the stream and then pop out the video and close the window. And then you're, then you'll just have text.
That's very cool. So I'm popping out the video.
Full screen, so it's hard to do that.
Oh. And I'm going to, then I'm going to close this tab.
And now you're just,
and now I have a questions on air tab that's just the questions.
Yep.
MB401, BIT.L. Well, you know what? What happened? Didn't we have a, our own shortener, twit.im? We got to do that, give that back.
So, yeah, so this is the time to while we're running this ad, ask questions, vote on questions.
Pay attention to the ad with all your might.
Exactly. Of course.
But you can then, after you've learned everything you need to know from this advertisement, go in there and vote. You don't need merely to ask questions. Voting up or down is also a considerably important
comments
task.
Are legal, too.
And you can comment?
Say,
holy cow.
Talk about my great
this
hair.
This does it all.
My windblown look.
Our show today brought to you by Gazelle. That is the great place to sell your phone, your tablet, your iPad, your Mac, and get something new, something sweet. So the point being that there is cash in them. There are drawers and closets under your bed, over your head, wherever you store your old used stuff. Why leave it there gathering dust when you could get cash on the barrel head? Money! American dollars, greenbacks, sawbucks, fins, in some cases, hundos. All you got to do is go to Gazelle. See, I speak the language of the street.
Yes.
The people. I'm a man of the people. All you got to do is go to Gazelle, G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com, and you just pick the thing that you got, and you say, here, what is it worth? Are you getting, it says here, the new iPad. Is there a new iPad? Well, there will be. Maybe you want to see
someday.
What your old...
Someday.
Someday. Go see what your old iPad is worth, or your old iPhone. They will even buy broken iPads and broken iPhones. So if you have a 4S that you cracked, but you don't want to go get it repaired, you just bring it to Gazelle. You don't have to even bring it. You get the price. You get the quote. And then get more stuff. Get it all together. Put it in your shopping basket. When you check out, it's kind of the reverse of a checkout. When you check out, instead of you sending them money, they'll send you a box prepaid. Postage paid on anything worth more than a buck, and you pile it into that box and you send it to them, and then they send you money. It's the opposite of a shopping basket. What would be the opposite? Where you pile stuff into it, like I don't know, a wheelbarrow,
money bag,
selling box.
It's the selling box.
Visit gazelle.com and fill your sell box up with sells and other stuff. Then they'll pay you fast by check, by PayPal, or if you buy a lot of stuff at Amazon, that 5% really helps. They give you an extra 5% on the Amazon gift cards. Gazelle.com. Join more than 700,000 happy folks who have been paid more than $100 million by Gazelle. Get cash for your stuff. Gazelle.com.
It's a much better idea than what I do with my old stuff. My son and I disassemble it.
You take it apart.
There's pieces of things everywhere.
We took apart.
I crashed two of those little helicopters, and so we were tearing them apart. So I think my son has a pretty good idea of how those little helicopters work now. And we had a long discussion about capacitors, what capacitors
building
do.
And don't touch them.
Well, yeah, there's that.
Did he find out? Did he learn?
No, it wasn't charged. But we are trying to build a new helicopter from the pieces of the old helicopter.
Good luck.
You know.
Not as easy as it sounds.
No, not at all. It's the processors that are hard to figure out.
Well, and it's a good... when I was a youngster, I would disassemble things like abacuses to figure out how they worked. No, I used to take apart pocket watches.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The problem with taking apart a watch is when you open it up, this thing goes boing, and it's never...
Never fits back in.
However much you jam... Question number one, the most popular question, upvoted 35 times, comes to us from Southwest Ohio MacMan. He's in Southwest Ohio. Where in hell is the refreshed Mac Mini? I'm not sure if he got the votes for this, for the curse, or just because everybody wants to know.
Everyone wants to know. I want to know.
But we don't know.
We don't know.
We have to stick to hell. Is like the 37th layer in hell is where the Mac Mini is? The 66th layer?
It's over there!
It's in John Mack's workshop.
No, there is no new Mac Mini.
I guess the question that this leads to is, what would we want to see in a new Mac Mini?
Wow, that's cool. So how did it get to being answered on air?
I hit answered.
That's really sweet.
In my thing. So now you know that it's being answered right now.
It's being answered right now, Southwest Ohio Mac Man.
I think that one of the things I obviously want to see is faster processors. What I would love to see is a faster GPU. That's the big thing that the laptops have.
There isn't even a Haswell Mac Mini, right?
I know.
Nope.
Yeah.
No, Haswell and Iris.
Such a great machine.
So it's more Iris than Haswell that I would care about. Haswell's features, it's the current processor from Intel, is lower, better battery. So it's good for a laptop, but that doesn't matter on a Mac Mini. It's always plugged in. Better performance, of course. Lower power means cooler, so nice for a very compact box.
Right.
What you really want is the onboard graphics, the Iris Pro graphics, because they're not going to put a Do they put a GPU in the Mac Mini?
I don't know, but whatever's in there is not very fast.
Be nice to have a little bit of a better GPU.
And onboard PCIe flash would be nice too.
Now then I might trade in my Mac Pro.
Well, I think that's the problem, right?
Oh, that's why they don't want to do it.
I don't know. I mean, it's just that the Mac Mini is so utilitarian, is so useful. We have so many of them. Use them as little servers. We use them as little connection things. It's
such a great
little piece of glue. It is just amazing.
If you had Iris Pro 5000 graphics and you had a PCIe SSD in there, and, you know, a fast i5 or i7 if you really want to go
Thunderbolt
crazy.
Thunderbolt 2
would be really nice. You're right. That's better for most people than a Mac Pro. That's everything you need. The only thing you get more with a Mac Pro is dual GPUs, really high-end GPUs. Beefy processor, but most people aren't going to use any of that.
It's the family sedan version of the Mac Pro. Yeah.
You know what it is? You know what it would be? It'd be the SS, the Chevy SS. That's the four-door sedan that Chevy makes with a Camaro drivetrain.
Nice.
There you have it.
That's what you want.
What I want to see is a Mac Mini that is more designed like the Apple TV, believe it or not, where make it really, really slim. Make it SSD, even if you have to. But also make the power requirements so minimal that you will have no problems keeping this on your network and keeping it on all the time. Because the amount of services that a Mac, even a headless Mac, can deliver to even a home network is phenomenal. If you have this one machine that has 100% uptime 24/7, that is always going to be serving documents, always going to be serving applications, always going to be serving media, always going to be keeping an eye on the health and the backups of the rest of the network. Wow, that would turn a lot of people from people who aren't even aware that Apple makes a Mac Mini to someone who's willing to buy a $500 Mac Mini, even just as an accessory to what they've got already without any intention of ever actually using it. And if that thing is easy to Velcro onto the back of a monitor to be the budget entry-level Mac for the rest of the world, so much the better. I'm not looking for power so much as I'm looking for accessibility for the rest of the world.
I mean, I almost think that's almost two different things where you have, say, Apple TV at $99, a Mac Mini, whatever, Nano.
Mac Nano.
At $250 or $300, and then the base Mac Mini, which is, let's say, $600, $700. I think that would be an incredible, that a lot of people would be really interested in. I know I'd be interested in it.
Okay,
Next question. That's
the end of the conversation.
Whoa.
So where is it? Who the hell knows?
Sitting
only,
in the labs.
Only Angela Arendt knows. It's in the labs.
She's got one.
Would they announce that at a WWDC, which is end of June? WWDC.
So they'll drop it in a press release.
They announced MacBooks at the last one, right?
Yep. And the Mac Pro team.
I'm going to predict something. You're never going to see a new Mac Mini. They don't care. They don't care.
But that's what we thought of with the Mac Pro, too.
No, well, it took a while. But
I thought they had given up.
Yeah, I like that Mac Pro, by the way. And I'm not knocking the Mac Pro. I'm very happy with it. My surfing, my email, it's all very fast.
So that's my only hope.
Someone email Tim Cook and ask him, because he'll respond to things like that sometimes. He'll say, you know, Apple's got plans for the next year.
Yeah, in wonderful new categories.
Yes.
Which means shades of purple or something. I don't know what that means.
So the next Mac Mini is going to be a wearable Mac Mini.
Yeah.
It's going to be a headband.
Backpackable Mac Mini.
I think a Mac Mini is more in line with Apple's consumer focus than the Mac Pro is. So I'm also not sure it fills. I think that Mac Mini fills in a lot of gaps that Apple doesn't want to avoid. Like they can't sell iMacs to they can't necessarily sell 500 iMacs to a school system, but they can make the sale for a less expensive and less complicated Mac Mini that they can just simply swap out for whatever they've got there to a brand new Mac Mini deck. So I do think there's a role for it. I don't think that it's a dead product. It's just we keep reminding ourselves that Apple, for all of the fact that they're building a 12,000 person spaceship to replace their new headquarters, they really are a company that feels as though they have limited resources and limited people and limited attention span. So if their focus is on other products, then other things in the product line are going to be ignored for a little while. And Mac Mini, unfortunately, is not the hot product, so it's going to wait until there's a long enough gap in their product line development to actually put the people on this project to make that a hot product again.
It'd be nice if they showed one off at WWDC along with 10.10. It would just be nice.
Apple, as we know, walks to the beat of their own drummer. And we said you're exactly right. We said the same thing for the Mac.
You can either dance or you don't dance, but they're not going to listen to you at all.
And this is why it's nice to have something that's made by a lot of different companies. And it's why Apple says stop doing that, because they want to control that stuff.
Well, and I still wish that. I mean, I think that would be, I think that would be something that would be very exciting, is to see Apple, release OS X.
Jersey Fudge asks, first of all, okay, I'm going to explain Jersey Fudge, because
should you put that through Urban Dictionary before we actually release this?
I understand. You immediately leap to that, don't you? But in fact, I know this guy because he's brought me fudge from Jersey. And it's not New Jersey. It's Old Jersey. It's the island of Jersey where the cows are happier.
Nice.
And the cream is richer.
They're truly happy cows.
And the fudge is finer.
And the word Jersey is spelled with 19 letters.
Yes. His question has disappeared. Oh, no, we're answering it.
Yeah.
He says, can Josh be kicked out of this chat room?
So we actually don't have...
Who is Josh?
Kick punch. Evidently,
is it a chat room? It's not really a chat room.
Yeah, I know. So the bottom line is people aren't going to see it if we don't talk about Josh anymore, because there's so many high-voted questions at this point.
We don't care.
But we are whoever working that might on... be. Just so you know, we don't have kick functions yet, but we're working on them.
Oh, I see Josh. He's from New South Wales.
Evidently, he's become problematic.
He gets downvoted, you know. He says bad things about people. Who cares? Will OS 10... 10.10.
Trips 10.
So we're currently at OS 10.9. OS 10.9.2.
It's so confusing.
So the next would be OS 10.10.
Yep.
So very confusing.
Will it be named after a beach?
It'll be named after a California landmark.
And the question was...
Half moon.
Will it be a huge update or just a UI change? Where is it in the TikTok... Are they still doing the TikTok? Remember, they did Leopard, Snow Leopard, Lion, Mountain Lion,
Mavericks.
I mean,
it depends if you consider a design a huge update. A lot of developers and a lot of people who work in the industry will tell you that design directly affects user experience, and that is one of the most important and valuable characteristics of what they do. I mean, Apple spent a year, well, as close to a year as they could, 10 months, at breakneck speed redesigning iOS 7 because they felt it was really, really important. And they're doing the same thing with OS 10.10.10 now. So to them, that is absolutely a big deal.
Can we put one person on renaming that? Just one.
Well, that's why they call it Maverick, so no one has to say that.
It could be OS triple X. OS XXX.
There you go.
Codename Syrah. You can call it that.
Syrah?
It does. Yes.
Like K Syrah or like a wine?
S-E-U-R-A.
They're all wine
code. Or like the Pointillist. The French pointillist of the 19th century.
The wine.
Georges Seurat. It's like Petit Seurat.
Too many details. It does make you wonder exactly what they're saving 11 for. Because every time they've gone up, the last time they went up a full number was when they went from OS 9 to OS 10. And you feel as though they're saving that for a day when they can say they're doing something as revolutionary and as able to break your old experience as OS 10 was for OS 9.
Well, we do know that OS 10.9.3 is being seeded to developers. So we will see that sooner than later. In fact, they seeded that about 5 days ago, 6 days ago. Renee, is that right?
Yeah, and they have that new Apple seed program where even if you're not a developer, you can sign up to test the betas. Don't do that on your primary machine, by the way.
Did you do that? If you do that, are you NDA'd? Are you...
You are NDA'd, yeah. And also you give up a lot of your AppleCare privileges because AppleCare, the front-facing consumer part of Apple, does not take care of beta software for you. So, only if you are really rugged and curious and have a spare machine.
So I'm sure somebody in the iMore team is rugged, curious.
My boss is running three 4K monitors off 10.9.3, and he's loving it.
3 4K monitors.
Yep.
Does he have a Mac Pro?
That's a lot of resolution.
He does. Yeah. He does.
That's tempting. You know, the only person I know who has an actually good 4K monitor is, we have him on Twitter on Sunday, Marcus Brownlee, who has a 60 hertz 4K monitor. I bet your boss has like those 30 hertz.
No, he got them on the Christmas sale off Dell, and they're running at 60 hertz on the new builds of OS X.
Oh, interesting. So that's an OS X specific thing.
Yep. I mean, you can get really crappy 30 hertz.
Yeah, yeah. They can't do more. But if you get a good one,
yeah.
Then the newest. When did that when did that kick in?
I think the first 10.9.3 beta had that.
Oh, that's good. So that's something to look forward to.
Yep.
For those four of us who
if
have
you want
Mac
to run
Pros.
NASA in your living room,
right? I think does it look like really nice? It must.
Yeah,
look sweet.
We have a picture. I'll put it in the chat. And we have a picture of it. It looks mind boggling.
Three. And there are they 27 inch, 30 inch? How big are they?
I think they're between 27 and 30. I forget the exact size. It was whatever the ones that Dell was selling over the holidays. I believe they're 27.
Those cat videos must look fabulous.
You can see every hair, Leo.
Okay. So look forward to it. Build 13D55, 10.9.3. What do we have a time frame that you think? I mean, this is what, the ninth? Ninth update, ninth seed of developers for developers?
Something like that. I mean, there's a month till WWDC, so I don't know if they'll be in a rush to.
Will they release it at WWDC?
They'll just release it when it's ready. I don't think they're under any pressure to.
All right. Apple has a few acquisitions. There is this little lawsuit going on. The jury seems to think that Apple is worth $119 million, a little less than the $2.2 billion they wanted. And it's kind of a mixed verdict because they gave Samsung a little something. We'll talk about what that all means. The great smartphone war, as Vanity Fair calls it. The big hoax that fooled pretty much everybody. The biometric, we'll talk about that, the biometric earbuds. And why you might not want to buy the brand new MacBook Air. Uh-oh, but first a word from Squarespace. I know you want Squarespace. I know you want Squarespace. The place to make your next website. Squarespace.com. If you go and visit, as I know many of you have, and you click the Get Started button, you'll immediately enter the Squarespace universe. Now, this is hosting, the best hosting there is. There's nothing better. You cannot bring a Squarespace site down. So many is the time we go to a website, bring it to its knees, and we wish, gosh, I wish they were on Squarespace. Well, you'll never have to worry about that. Plus, really amazing software. Look, you go to the website just because they like to show off like all the stuff their templates can do, like the parallax scrolling and all of that stuff. You start with 25 beautiful designer templates. Each of them have, these are state-of-the-art. These are award-winning templates. I mean, just gorgeous. But then look at all the people who've used the template and what they've done with it. Everything from hot dogs to gardens. I just want to see this because I'm curious what Harry Curtis hot dogs are. I guess he's available for hire. Established 2013. Okay, you could make your site look that, or look at this, Indian garden. Now, this is beautiful. In Sedona, Arizona, cafe and market. So these templates have another nice feature, which is no matter what size screen, they will look gorgeous. There's what we call, you know what? This is the new thing, and this is what I like about using Squarespace, is you're always kind of making, your site will look modern no matter what. And the new thing is now big images, what we call full bleed, they fill the screen, right? And they're just gorgeous. This is
And they figure it all out so you don't have to.
You don't have to think about it. It's all done for you. Whenever you add images, they're resized to 9 different thumbnails so that they'll always fit whatever it is that you're trying to fit. And, you know, this is a magazine, and they're going to want their site to look gorgeous, right? So that you'll buy the magazine.
Right.
They went right to Squarespace, and of course they did. And note, buy the magazine. Every template has commerce built in. So you don't even think about it. Look at this magazine. They're taking orders. Add to cart. This is all within Squarespace. They support, there's the cart. It's just beautiful. It's just, like, elegant. You don't have to think about all this stuff.
And it's mobile, desktop. You know, you're not, like, that takes a lot of work. Believe me,
We deal with that.
And the point is, they didn't have to be a developer to do this. They don't have to know CSS or JavaScript or anything, because Squarespace, these designers are so good. All you could point and click, drag and drop. You can bring in your social media. You turn on the cart. The thing to do is go to squarespace.com and just try it, and you'll see. You can import your existing content in from your site. So they have, importing tools for all the blog APIs. So you'll get comments, you'll get images, you'll get everything. So you can really see what your existing site, what that content will look like on the new template. They've got the logo designer. They've got apps for iPad and iPhone and all this. $8 a month, which, if you sign up for a year, includes a free domain name. They'll hook that all up for you. Hosting plus software to make a really remarkable site for your blog, for your e-commerce, for your studio, your photography portfolio, whatever it is that you do, you know you do. So just go to squarespace.com. You don't have to give them an offer code or anything, or a credit card number. Just sign up, and you got 2 weeks free. If after the end of the 2 weeks you say, I think I would like this, as little as $8 a month, use the offer code MacBreak, you get 10% off. That's pretty good, too. Offer code MacBreak at squarespace.com. Use the offer code. That way they know you heard it here. Let's talk about the, I don't normally like to talk about lawsuits. I don't want to encourage this, but the jury did come in. In fact, I think they're deliberating today for a little bit of a second thing. They had to recalculate. No, I think they're done.
That was yesterday.
They recalculated the verdict. $119 million. That's a lot less than the previous award. So the first Apple Samsung trial was over trade dress, how the thing looked, whether it was confusing if you go into the store and you see this Samsung phone and you think you're buying an iPhone. And that jury gave Samsung more than $1 billion. That judgment's still in, being...
Gave Apple, yeah.
I'm sorry. Took from Samsung, gave to Apple. In this one, very similar, although it was about five patents, things like slide to unlock and click, in a text message to dial a phone number. The jury did say, yes, there was infringement. A lot less, though. $119.6 million to Apple. Samsung, which countersued, got $158,000.
Yeah.
So the jury, I think this is sending a little bit of a message. And in fact, I don't know. The jury sent a little message saying, well, it's not like there was this pervasive Samsung stealing thing. They did, I don't know.
You kind of wonder how much damage is being done to both parties by these protracted lawsuits. It's not just that Samsung is losing some. It's not just that they had to write a check out of their pocket lint for $150,000. Apple has to pay that check. It's that every time that these lawsuits go forward, there's a discovery process where more and more documents are brought to light. And as more scrutiny gets paid to every single patent that Apple and Samsung and all these other tech companies have taken out, the court is getting a little bit more skeptical that any of these patents should actually have been issued to begin with. So I hope that we see an end to the scorched earth policy, because right now within a year we're going to enter our Ozymandias phase, where it's Apple's going to be this statue in the desert that won all the lawsuits, but the inscription at the base of the statue, which is all that remains, is we won all those lawsuits. Oh well.
And remember, Apple's suing Samsung as a proxy, right? To sue Google directly. For some reason, they haven't. And the jury even mentioned that. The jury even said, why don't you sue Google?
It's hard to prove Google earned any money from Android.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
Google is backing Samsung and agreed to indemnify them on at least two of the patents. So some of that $119 million will come out of Google's pocket.
I think Apple's intention here oftentimes, I don't know what their intention is, but my guess is that it creates a chilling effect on other people who think that they're going to any other manufacturer, maybe not Samsung, but everybody else who thinks that they might do something that's like what Apple has already done or patented. Apple's going to make clear to them that we will take you to court and we'll keep it in court forever. And so the thing is that I think that they don't care how much money they win. What they want to do is create an unsafe environment for anyone who thinks that they're going to copy something that's like what they did. Now, I don't know whether that's valid or not, but I think that might be the play here, is to make, it's not just the Samsung, but for every manufacturer that's using Android, because Samsung probably won't even be an Android developer in 3 to 4 years. They're probably going to be in their own little world. And so, but it is a big message to the rest of the Android platform that, that Apple will bring to bear and keep on pounding until there's nothing left to pound.
According to Ina Fried, writing at Recode, the two patents that Google said will indemnify you on, background synchronization and universal search, the jury said Samsung did not infringe. So it looks like, I guess Google won't have to help Samsung out at all. Samsung can afford this. However, the two patents that the jury did say infringed were the Quick Links patent and the Slide to Unlock patent, which surprises me because there is clear prior art on Slide to Unlock. I mean, clear prior art. A third patent, which covered automatic word correction, autocorrect, was determined by the court to have infringed. The court said, no, there's no, they own this one. And all the jury had to do was decide damages. So a victory for Apple, but I think you're right, Andy, a Pyrrhic victory. I've heard some say this will never end, that this is Apple's going to continue to go after these companies forever.
There's a thing that's inside Apple. Apple's a very personal company. They're not run like like IBM or a company like that. It's very much a lot of individuals. And to their core, a lot of people, Steve Jobs is, of course, the most famous one, who truly believe that they did something special with the iPhone in 2007 and that their manufacturing partner at the time and that their services partner at the time, Samsung and Google, used their relationships to learn how to make a modern smartphone. And then, in Apple's way of thinking, betrayed them, copied them, and leveraged all of Apple's research, development, sweat, tears, design, engineering, everything to basically jumpstart their own entry into
the smartphone. Isn't that patently false?
It's not patently false, but it may also not be illegal.
I think it's false. I think Apple, give Apple credit. The first iPhone was a total breakthrough, and everybody in the industry sat up and said, whoa. But that was that was 2007. I think, and I don't think you can say, we ought to own the slab glass face.
But don't we think that the early Samsung phones were specifically looking like Apple,
yes,
specifically so that they would get sales and they get
power cords? I mean, Samsung made a BlackBerry when BlackBerry was popular. They made a Windows mobile phone when that was popular. They made a power cord that looked like Apple. And if you read the Vanity Fair article, is amazing because it tells you that. And I've worked with companies in Japan that are very similar. It's that there's a very different philosophy there. They don't see that as copying, really. They see that as, this is what the market is doing. We're going to do what the market wants. It's an incredibly different outlook. And American companies sometimes react like the television industry did, like the computer industry did, like the mobile industry doing now. Considers that copying, where they just consider it making the product that the market wants. And those two philosophies do not coexist very well. And there's often a lot of incredibly bad lawsuits. I had a friend who worked in refrigerators who said the same thing. I forget if it was about Samsung or someone, but he said, they copied our bottom pull-out fridge drawer and we were in litigation forever and there's fridge patents that have to be respected. And these things get worked out. But mobile is an incredibly new business and none of that stuff has been worked out legally yet.
Yeah. Well, I think that some of the frustration for folks who are trying to figure things out is obviously that, more R&D goes on, or the argument is that more R&D is going on in the United States for some of this stuff. And when people just copy it, that it doesn't account for that R&D, that goes into it. It's not just the cost of the item. It's the cost of getting it out there. And it does, it can overall, suppress the market in that area. I don't know if it really does here. I think Apple's making plenty of money. So I'm not sure if I agree with it. I think that's the argument, but I think that, it does take a while to do it well.
The other thing is that I think there has to be a line drawn between what Samsung did, certainly with their first couple of generations of phones, which is just obviously say, let us make as close a knockoff of the iPhone as we possibly can. And the basic idea that's been sort of at the engine of almost every major advance over the past 20, 30, 40 years, which is to say, that wasn't my original idea, but this concept is really, really strong. I'm going to take that concept and use that to affect my thinking and use that to affect the products and the ideas that I'm going to be cultivating. And so if you decide that the first person to do a four-wheeled vehicle now owns the concept of four wheels, and now you can do three wheels, you can do five wheels, you can do six wheels, so long as you don't put the four of those back wheels together close enough that it looks like four wheels, that just absolutely ends all innovation. And it also sort of makes a mockery of the nature of ideas. Ideas evolve. You get inspired by sources. And sometimes that's something that lawyers have to argue about whether there was an actual infringement or not. But you can't deny that if everybody who worked on the iPhone were to be teleported onto the Mars base without any connection to anything that had ever been done before, they would have created something that was the same thing, totally unique, totally in and of itself, that had no inspiration from anything else. So I just like to have that. I just think that we should make sure we observe that line between the two. You can innovate, you can develop, you can move technology forward while still being part of the world that you live in. And it's hard to justify creating a device that can never have any overlap with anything else that's ever come before.
There's a thing with Samsung, though, especially. I love the Motorola stuff. I love the HTC stuff. I've never bought a Samsung thing. And a little bit of it is for this reason that I feel a lot of their products are derivative. And you can say, you know, They copied the iPhone when it was at Verizon. You know, there was no Verizon iPhone, so they made something that was as close to a Verizon iPhone. But I've covered Samsung events like Andy has. I've been at some of the same ones. The Galaxy S3 event, they come out and they say, oh, look, we're making a Riverstone. No one's ever done this before. Inductive charging, no one's ever done this before. I was at the Palm Pre event 2 years earlier and saw that exact announcement.
Yeah.
And that, as a consumer, it doesn't bother me, but it disappoints me because I would like to have something amazingly Samsung that I could buy, which they're doing more of now.
I think that's the problem. We are getting things that are amazingly Samsung each and every revision of their phones. I mean, there's another reason why I can't be quite so angry with Samsung, because who in the end pays the price for operating your business that way? When was the last time that Samsung came out with a flagship phone that everybody said, wow, this is so new, this is exactly the way that I'd like an Android phone to be? I mean, Nokia has done fantastic things with the 1020 and the 1520 and the other phones they've done in the Lumia line. HTC, their HTC One line, is amazing. The Sony Xperia is an amazing phone that gets lots and lots of people writing positive things about it because it's just such a wonderful piece of design. Every time, the S3 was probably the last really great phone that Samsung put out because it's the last one that seemed to have its own style and its own bit of panache about it. They're not doing that warrior's journey of meditating under a waterfall for 3 or 4 days until inspiration hits. They really are just trying to take whatever's the other warriors from their other meditations came up with last year. And it just shows in the product line. They've done some good stuff, but they've just never done anything really great.
But you, okay. So, and I agree. I wouldn't buy another Samsung phone unless they've, you know, fixed this stuff up. And they spend so much money on marketing, they completely dominate. And it's all about, you know, they buy the ads.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't sue somebody for that. And
Oh, you can.
Sure, well, you can. You can sue somebody for anything.
Won't be successful, yeah.
But you shouldn't sue them for that. I have to say, I think it's time for Apple to lay down arms, and Samsung to lay down arms. Just calm down. You're in different enough spaces now. If Apple continues to go after Samsung, there's two possibilities. One, Steve Jobs is so revered that his holy war will just continue forever, and that's not good for Apple. Or two, they're so afraid of Samsung that they don't dare let up.
I don't think they're afraid of Samsung, and but I do think that they are. I still think that this is good marketing from Apple to other Android developers. I think that's what this message is. I don't think that Apple, and it doesn't cost them anything, I mean, to do this. I mean, they won enough in this one and whatever. I mean, this is all noise to them. So I think the average person doesn't even know Apple. I mean, we know a lot about Apple suing Samsung, but I think the average person, my parents don't know anything about the Apple lawsuit, and my dad's a lawyer. You know, and so...
What, really?
He doesn't care. I mean, he doesn't care
about
Apple.
He doesn't care, I understand, but he's heard of it.
He's probably heard about it, but he probably hasn't.
I think users heard of it. I really do.
I don't think... I think 99% of the users, even if they've heard about it, it's kind of background noise. You know, it's so, you know, I just don't think that, but I think that people who are developing for Android, you know, and that pay a lot of attention to it. But I don't think that the average person who owns a phone either knows or even if they know, cares at all whether it's happening.
They also don't care if Samsung stole ideas or entire phone designs from Apple.
Just give me a good phone. I don't care.
Right. So this is happening. Yeah. I think for the average consumer, this is happening. This is something that happens way in the background. It's kind of a side story. For people who are in the know, I think that then it's...
I am kind of impressed by how much consumers seem to know about the mobile market. I think, you know, it's something different. They take it much more personally. And it's a surprisingly large number of people know a lot about the stuff that we think is really inside baseball. You go into a store, and because my kids break their phones every few weeks, so I spend a lot of time in the AT&T store, and it's surprising how much consumers, even just normal people you wouldn't expect, know.
Well, that's articles in Vanity Fair, Leo. That's not a trade publication.
Right, Vanity Fair, for crying out loud. They must care, because why would you, the great smartphone war.
What a great story, though. I want that filmed. I want to see people eating papers.
Kurt Eichenwald. For 3 years, Apple and Samsung have clashed on a... Of course, you don't... this doesn't mean you have to care or know about it, because he sets it up so that you care about it. For 3 years, Apple and Samsung have clashed on a scale almost unprecedented in business history. Their legal war costing more than $1 billion and spanning four continents. This could be like the next 300.
I know. I was going to say, what you're waiting for is that.
Apple!
It's an amazing story. I mean, they have not Apple, but Korean investigators who are going after them for price fixing on LCDs are trying to get in there, and they're stalling them so they can swap out computers and eat the paperwork. I mean, I love my company, but I'm going to need an awful lot of
paperwork. I'm not going to eat the paperwork. Yeah, I'm not eating the paperwork. So I haven't read the article yet, but I was busy looking at the pictures of Madonna. But is it good? Is it good?
It shows you how insane these companies, and anyone who's dealt with big keiretsus in Japan in the 80s or with big Korean conglomerates in this decade, it's enlightening to feel how much of people's lives and how big and how powerful and how all-encompassing these companies are.
He talks about the Purple Dorm. The Purple Dorm smelled like pizza, occupying a building at Apple's headquarters in Cupertino. The dorm, so named because the employees were there 24/7 amid the ever-present odor of fast food, was, I don't know where the purple comes from, was the site of the company's most secret undertaking, codenamed, Project Purple.
iPhone, codename Project
Purple. The iPhone is Project Purple, the Purple Dorm, and they call it a dorm. You know, the dorm that I visited at University of Colorado Boulder didn't smell like fast food.
No, and there's not a lot in Boulder that smells like fast food. Fast food's not very popular in Boulder. However, there are other things that are
later,
very popular.
Later, after I left, it smelled like fast. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
So I like the – I read all these background books. I presume that this is the beginning of Kurt's going to write a book that will be this story, although we've seen this before, this book. I guess we haven't seen a Samsung Apple book. We saw the Google Apple book.
We haven't seen a whole lot of books that have had that really got the journalism down cold.
Right.
We've seen a lot that sort of hovered around it that had bits you can believe, bits you can't believe. We've had authoritative biographies that were breathtaking in some of the insights, but made you really look at the bare patches of unpainted wood that really should have been in there. We're still waiting for a really good journalist powered book on the development of these devices.
I do like the conclusion.
Soul of a New Machine is still a fascinating book, even if you have absolutely no interest in microprocessor design. Yeah. Any process that tells you about how intelligent, interesting, and creative people struggle to complete a project and bring a vision into reality from just synaptic misfirings inside your head into an actual commercial product, that's a great project to watch. And so that's why I really want to see more stories like this.
There have been moments, this is his concluding paragraphs, there have been moments that bordered on the absurd. One of the patents invoked by Apple is a single sentence claim with diagrams for a rectangular device with rounded corners, not any particular device, just the rectangle itself. But all that seeming silliness was practically demonstrated to be important by Samsung's own lawyers when federal judge Lucy Koh, who is still the judge on all of this stuff, held up the iPad and Galaxy 10 and asked a lawyer, "Hey, can you tell which is which?" "Not at this distance, Your Honor," said the lawyer, who was standing 10 feet away. No one could claim a total victory in the global litigation wars. One person close to Apple said the endless fighting has been a drain on the company, both emotionally and financially. Meanwhile, as has happened with other cases where Samsung violated a company's patents, it has continued to develop new and better phones throughout the litigation to the point where even some people who have worked with Apple say the Korean company is now a strong competitor on the technology, not just a copycat. We'd agree on that, yes?
Yep.
Yep. Yep.
Despite his role in propelling the lawsuits forward, Jobs, who died in 2011 by now, I disagree with this part, might have looked at the scorched earth left behind by the litigation and followed his own advice about recognizing when it's time to move on. I don't think Steve would be moving on. I've looked in the mirror every morning and asked myself, if today were the last day of my life, would I want to do what I'm about to do today? This is from his famous Stanford commencement. Yeah, he'd be still. Oh, yeah.
The best thing about these lawsuits, and I say this purely selfishly, is how much of the history of the development of the iPhone that it's made public. Yeah. Because Apple, given their own druthers, would not make any of this public. And it is a really important cultural object.
It's a benefit to us.
Absolutely. We've learned about Project Purple and the Purple Dorm.
And the dorm. By the way, somebody in the chat room said Henry's dorm is the Purple Haze dorm. I think that's actually quite correct. Yeah. After more than 1,000 days of litigation, hopefully one morning, Kurt finishes up, soon executives at Samsung and Apple will look at their reflection and at long last hit their limit of nose. That's where he ends, but I don't think I don't know. Is it? Is
Apple
it
a, signed deals with Motorola. They've signed deals with HTC. It's not
they've
impossible,
settled.
Though.
They've yeah. settled, in other words, yeah.
Yeah.
It's, this is now. It's a, the diminishing returns. $1.1 billion the first time, $119 million the second time. Next, it's going to be $11 million. Then it's going to be $1.50. It's just...
I mean, 2012 was the big win. I mean, that was the one that said, look, here is nearly $2 billion in infringements. Not only that, but as you guys have been saying, a very strong warning against anybody else who wants to be a major player and wants to make a phone that is too similar to the iPhone. Major victory there. Also a major just philosophical victory of having court say, yes, it's not as though Apple just simply did some obvious things. They put a lot of passion into this. They put a lot of innovation, and they built a lot of patents that they should have been issued, and those are being defended in court. Everything, I think, after that is kind of crumbs. And so I don't know what Steve would or would not have done. I don't know what is in Apple's best interest right now. But I think that whatever they needed to achieve by suing Samsung, they got a couple years ago. And I do expect that we're going to see diminishing lawsuits and diminishing aggression on this front. If they're trying to kill Android at this point, yikes! Well, I don't think it's
a kill.
There's a time you can't kill cockroaches anymore. You can only keep them outside your
coexist.
I don't think the point is to kill Android. I think the point is to make it unsafe for developers, so that when they look at that and they think, oh, I'm just going to copy. Oh, that whatever Apple just did, that's great. And for them to think about it on the other end of that. I mean, I know there's a lot of legal things that, as a company, you always look at. Whether it's, you know, whether it's how you develop things, what you do, how you deal with your employees, all those things that are, you know, every decision is informed by, you know, the legal issues that are around it. And so what Apple's doing is simply creating those legal issues so that everyone gets that when you see Apple do something really cool and you think you're going to add that to your operating system, know that, you know, they will be, you know, relentless.
Meanwhile, it continues. Samsung says they're going to appeal, and they're doing an event just a few days before WWDC, May 28th, to kick off a new conversation around health. But wait, isn't Apple going to kick off the... John Patchkowski, writing in Recode, says, word of advice, if you've been anticipating the debut of new category-defining hardware at WWDC, dial back your expectations or be disappointed. No new Apple TV. Tim Cook, according to sources, will not show off a wearable device, will not even preview new software for the Apple TV. Mark Gurman says OS 10, 10, 10, and iOS 8, and maybe that health book app, but don't expect much more. You guys agree?
Yeah, I did say that a couple days ago that this is the last week for any pundit or analyst to make predictions about WWDC. If you want to make sure that readers forget what you said by the time the announcements are actually made.
You got to have 30 days separating your prediction and the actual
That's
event.
The return window for your predictions.
Yeah, yeah. The biometric ear pods. No, not so much. It was posted on Secret. Now, anybody who reports a tech rumor that they read on Secret, I read a lot of tech rumors on Secret. That at the very least, what you should do is say, well, okay, I saw it on Secret. This was the post. Apple's new EarPods will have sensors in them for heart rate and blood pressure. Also, eye beacons so they don't get lost. They'll require the lightning port. It's why the audio jack was moved to the bottom. Whoever wrote this, obviously smart. Apple does have a patent for biometric sensors in the ears. Eye beacons, lightning bolt, lightning port. I don't know. It's credible, isn't it? And that's probably why.
I think the thing is it's that whole, the best thing about a rumor is when it's close enough that you go, oh, that makes sense, because you're really against soft tissue and you could theoretically get that data. So, I mean,
the leaker says,
to me. I was like, this doesn't seem like something that Apple would do.
So first of all, I hope we did not report it last week.
I don't think so.
And if we did, we would say, oh, yeah, this seems crazy. But everybody, all the tech blog. But, you know, I have mixed feelings about reporting Apple rumors in general. Rumors are not news.
Right.
Rumors are just stuff floating around, often wrong.
But they're good conversation pieces. It gives you something to talk about, as long as we tell people them.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're interesting as launching off points for ideas on where Apple might be headed, or the company that we think we understand, how would they actually do this sort of idea? But yeah, there's a reason why just no journalist who likes their safety will ever speculate on anything that Apple might do any closer than 10 days before any sort of a media event.
Right.
Because they are a company that can do almost literally anything and that can change their minds in the shorter time frame that you could ever imagine. So it's interesting to have the conversation about how health is going to be increasingly important to Apple. It is such a perfect fit for the sort of mandate that they've given themselves to not only make a lot of money selling technology, but also improve people's lives and create brand new things. And I don't think there's been a device right now that really cracks that for now. And the idea of having a health device that can really be that take away all the problems of wanting to monitor your activity and monitor your fitness, that's something that Apple would be in with both hands.
Yeah, so, I can't imagine them putting eye beacons in this. It would the thing would cost too much. It would have to have battery life.
Well, also I think my thing is the strain relief of having all that strain on the Lightning connector. I think that I don't think the Lightning connector is something they want to use for something that's going to be bounced around and jostled around.
So the guy who posted the original secret created a Tumblelog, then linked to it from that secret post. His Tumblelog post: close the earpod doors, please, Hal. An apology. I leaked the story about biometric earpods, but I'm not proud of it. Hundreds of blog posts, thousands of tweets, all the news items from the Daily Mail in the UK to the Evening News in the US, all because of a post on Secret. He says, I wrote it 5 minutes after I woke up on the 1st of May. I was blurry-eyed. I had a headache. I was using the toilet and worried about my blood pressure. I'd been messing around with Secret as an outlet for comedy. He said it was a joke.
Right.
But, you post this stuff.
Well played.
Yeah.
Well, but good on him, because if you read the entire post, the Tumblr post, he said that the reason why he's coming clean is that now he's afraid that people who work inside Apple are going to get investigated or even fired for, quote, leaking out information on the idea that
wouldn't that be ironic?
So yeah. Well,
that
he caused Apple to cancel the biometric headgear.
Yeah,
exactly.
He says that the first thing I felt was fear. He says I didn't put it on Reddit. I guess that's where it goes next, right? It goes from Secret to Reddit.
Right.
And then from Reddit to TechCrunch. And then from TechCrunch to bigger mainstream media outlets. Pretty soon it's true.
Right.
I mean, it's zero risk, Leo. You get to have Apple in a headline, and you didn't create the rumor. So if it's wrong, you'll just do another follow-up story that has Apple in the headline.
He says, I just made it all up on the crapper.
Well done. Why can't I create some kind of viral rumor that?
Okay. Anyway, it's fake.
I posted something that was like 5,000 words long last week that probably didn't get as much attention as this.
Exactly.
You were obviously Wi-Fi router into the bathroom where
you were generating your post from the wrong desk.
From the
we sucked at our jobs.
I thought you were going to say generating the post from the wrong end, but that's
exactly.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am so excited. This is going to be my pick of the week. Give it to me. This is my pick of the week. We're going to get to our pick of the weeks in just a second. So Lisa says, I've been making muffins, brand muffins, healthy brand muffins.
Uh-huh.
She says, I don't want the muffin. I just want the top. I said, well, you got to have the muffin if you're going to have the top. She says, no, I'm going to find muffin top pans. They make pans that are just muffin tops.
I had no idea. You're right. There's no reason to eat the rest of it. You just want the muffin top.
Ladies and gentlemen, I give you from Chicago Matalik.
Oh, man.
The original muffin top pan.
That is awesome.
My pick of the week, ladies and gentlemen.
You know what else that'd be really good for? You know what else that's good for?
What?
You could use that to cook your little egg sandwiches to go in like English muffin with a little piece of ham,
I'm going to make all sorts of stuff in the muffin top.
Small pancakes.
Do we have any questions, Alex Lindsay?
Oh, yes, we do.
bit.ly/mb401 for our question engine.
Okay, this is our most... And what's interesting about this, by the way, is if you look at the questions, is that there's like five of them that are very popular, and the rest of them are just kind of
popular. How do I get that interface?
So,
dashboard?
I don't think I have you. Oh, I think you're an admin.
So I am an admin. And dashboard. Look at this. There's a graph. You do a graph of questions asked over time.
Yeah, you can't show people that yet.
So anyway, so
don't look.
The long tail, obviously.
There's no grass.
But it's interesting. Oh, actually, go back to dashboard one more time. I'll show you one.
Okay.
Thing.
Okay.
You can
show this, Chad. So even I'll though it's not good.
But you can have. We've had 169 people.
Yep. Registered.
182 questions.
282 questions.
A lot of them trolls.
18 answered.
18 answered.
Some of those answered off the air.
Yeah,
obviously.
I answered some of them. But then you can see
it's cool. It's so then I can look at questions here.
Yeah. Okay, now turn that part off. So anyway, so now click on that little thing that looks like an iPhone.
Oh, this is the right. Pretty interface.
Now when you click on, yeah,
back
now,
to Jersey Fudge.
Click on this little gear.
Oh, click on the gear. Okay.
And
you can show this, Chad. It's not secret.
High
answered questions. Okay, yeah, close it.
Close.
This is very. This is like you put effort into this.
We put
it's
a
like
lot
somebody
of
programmed
into this.
This.
Andy, our
what do
you
write it in? Is it in Python?
It sits in Heroku.
It's Ruby on Rails.
So,
if you were put in charge, ask Kester JTT from Trinidad and Tobago.
Oh, yeah. Wait. Click on this.
What happens now? Is it going to make it a big question?
And then hit answer.
Answer.
And then,
if you were put in charge of the next Apple TV. Oh, this is nice. It's pretty and red and big. What are the three? This is good, Alex. I like this.
We've been working hard on
it. Sell this?
That's the plan.
What's his name?
It's Andy Abgotson.
Andy Abgotson. Thank you.
I think I said the Andy's name right. Andy, I know you're watching, so I'm sorry if I didn't say it right. Abgotson. Most of people just call him Spoon. So anyway, but Andy is the one who built this out. Yeah. So anyway, so
if you're put in charge of the next Apple TV, kids, what are the three main things you would change or add? Games or app? No, just forget games. Apps.
Open
the number one
up for an app store.
Store. One. Number two.
Universal search.
Universal search. Bingo.
Survey says
it's universal search. Number two.
Webcam.
No.
Notifications.
You lose. Survey says.
I'd want to be a receiver for notifications, too.
Speech enabled.
Yeah, Siri.
Siri
with a webcam.
That's so hard. Well, speech enabled.
I do not want notifications on my TV. I do not.
You can have a Skype sidebar.
I hate it when people call and I get their phone number in the front of Game of Thrones or 24 or.
Okay, but that's why you have a notifications manager for this that lets you say, I want to hear things from this app, but not this one.
As long as it has an auto response.
The number of times that I'm watching TV and I've got my phone handy or got my computer handy, not because there's something I'm actively doing, but there's something I sort of actively want to keep an eye on. I mean, I want the Apple TV to be less a thing that I put. I want it to be less of a streaming music player and a way to integrate this big, huge, wonderful screen that's in the social area of
you
my house.
You want that more than
into the services that I've got on my digital network. That's
you
all.
You want that more than speech?
Speech, well,
natural language parsing.
Speech is fine, but how are you going to use it? It works great on the Fire TV as a way of not having to type out
Game of Thrones,
or yeah, exactly. But in terms of voice command, are you going to have it listening all the time?
No,
I have my
Xbox One
you,
does that. And
are you
it's
going
not
to
very
are you going to make sure it's going to have a wide enough library of commands that I don't have to have a card handy to say, oh wait, I'm supposed to say. Find me Game of Thrones on the DVR.
No, and that's what's nice about Amazon. You just say the name, right? There's no command. But there are two commands
you have to hold down a microphone button on the remote to activate it.
Right.
I mean, Google Now could make that work, but only if it – I don't – there's it's amazing to me. The more of these devices that I try and the more interfaces that I try, how few of them do anything better than up, down, left, right, okay.
I know.
On an actually nicely made remote control.
But I got to tell you, the thing I use it all the time on the Xbox One, Xbox pause. If you want to get up and go to pee-pee, you say Xbox pause. You don't touch anything, and it stops.
Right.
And then you come back in the room, you say Xbox play. So pause, play. This is it. We're tabling this conversation. To answer Kester JJ, we all agree. App Store?
Yes.
Absolutely.
We all agree. Universal search?
Yes.
Better launcher, too. We got this big grid that is just scroll.
They got to fix that.
I can hide. I can show. I will never, ever, ever, UI's ever, bad. Ever use ESPN Channel Ocho. Yeah.
Well, you can remove it,
that app.
But Andy, you can't remove it. But you have to do it in the parental controls.
You
can
hide
from the screen now. They made it easier.
Yeah.
We really do have to see an overhaul of the user interface. It also has to be faster. I switched back to Apple TV for a couple of weeks just to make sure I'm recentering my expectations, and the number of times that I have to look at a spinning progress bar or something that says you're now being authenticating right now, compared to the Roku or anything else I've got plugged into my TV, it's like, wow, that is so freaking slow.
All right, I'm going to table
the plus side. Sorry.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, on the plus side, Apple's paying their own transit fees for Netflix, so it's rock
solid. I agree. Best Netflix ever. Yeah. Dan Rayburn said that. So
the interface sucks, but good playback.
I'm going to be Judge Lucy Coe right now. Okay, I'm tempted, but I'm not going to do an accent. again, number one, App Store. We all agree. Number two, we all agree, Universal Search. Number three, we mostly agree, voice.
Yep, with a webcam.
Nobody, no! Give me a new question.
Are you hit done?
Hit done. I hit escape.
Uh-oh. Well, we'll see how that
was
goes.
Was escape a mistake?
Well, it just won't turn off. It won't mark it as done. Anyway, so...
Google releases Classroom today.
Uh-oh.
Now it's confused. I broke it.
We're working on it.
That was easy.
Alex can't have
this is why we beta tested on the show. So,
how do I get it big?
I don't know if you can right now. Because it's probably still on another page.
Maybe there's another page open in my browser? No.
No, I don't know. You put it into a new state.
Let's press back.
Let's see here.
Okay, back. And then iPhone interface. And then answer.
Well done.
Adrian Merrington of Midland, Michigan says, Google releases Classroom today. I don't know about that.
So Classroom is a integrated solution to the – it basically takes the Google Docs and then adds a wrapper around that to make it easier for assignments and classes and everything else. So if you can use it in a school.
Got it.
And assign student stuff, and then all the Google Docs are easy to register, and the teacher can look at them and all that stuff.
But Adrian says Apple seems to have forgotten about schools. What do they need to do to remain relevant to the classroom? They've done one thing already, which is an $899 MacBook Air. I think that was directly aimed at that. I can only think of the iPad as being common in classrooms. They own classrooms of the iPad, don't you think?
They do pretty well with them.
I think textbooks.
Textbooks they let drop, they let slide. Was a good opportunity.
I think that there's an opportunity to redefine what a classroom is, which is not what anybody's doing right now.
I think Google Docs is now the air and the oxygen in the atmosphere of education at this point.
Yeah,
where I can't.
It can be.
More choices. They're announcing new Chromebooks today. There's more choices.
I feel like
that's a strong contender. Apple's really good.
It's a more democratic system where no matter what it is that you're running at home or whatever you have access to, it can run to Google Docs. That's not true of pretty much any other solution you can come up with.
iCloud won't do that.
If you're stuck with like a $300, $350 buy-in.
That's right.
For anything,
no school, no government, no local government wants to tell parents you have to be in the Apple ecoverse.
And I'm sure they don't want to have a 5-year plan that says at no point can we ever add anything to this group that doesn't have an Apple logo on it. The web apps are really, really good, but it's not up to what educators want. And also, they're running into the same effect that Microsoft got with Microsoft Office, where it no longer has to be the greatest suite in the world. It happens to be the suite that everybody knows how to use, and they just don't want to have to train people up on a brand new system, or every time you get a new employee, train that person up on a whole new system. And it's not FUD either. It's just how much time do you want to spend learning
this? We're doing lightning round, so we're going to move on. Paul France, Pennsylvania, given the Apple TV, more Apple TV stuff, when will that get a UI update and will it require new hardware? Renee Ritchie,
There will probably be a version that runs on existing hardware, but the new version will probably also come with a new refreshed interface.
What's next for iCloud.com asks Mark in Atlanta. iTunes, iMessage, iPhoto, I give up.
I work. That it works, just that it's smooth, that it works, that it's, I think that's all they need to do.
You're wrong. Apple will give up cloud entirely and say, just buy more hardware.
iSneakernet.
photo and video is going to be the
next photo and video.
They need to. They killed the photo gallery and they haven't put it back yet.
Yep.
What are the challenges? This is from Awakened Sleeper. I'm sorry, Sleeper. I didn't mean to shout. Los Angeles, California. What are the challenges or roadblocks for Apple? What is the blue line doing that going across?
It's refreshing.
It's refreshing.
It doesn't do anything when it's a single page, but it does when...
Got it. What are the challenges or roadblocks for Apple to open up Apple TV for developers? I love my Amazon Fire TV, which, by the way, works with Koch's Allcast.
Interesting.
So it is open because it's using Dial. It seems to be pretty open.
I think that the roadblock is Apple just doesn't want to do it. I think that they're afraid of making it complicated and messy and everything else. And I think that I think they need to. I think that they've been able to do it. I mean, it's just an iOS app.
They just need new hardware.
Yeah. Nick Costa, Hyde Park, New York, home of the beautiful Franklin Delano Roosevelt Home and Museum.
Hyde Park.
Will iTunes on the Mac be split into different apps?
As soon as it leaves Windows. No, absolutely. I mean, they have to port it to Windows, so they bundle it all up in one big thing.
They can't do it in Windows, yeah. Will they ever give up Windows?
No, because they want to sell those guys' iPhones too, remember?
Yep. Kevin, Ocala, Florida. Since Windows 8 has been such a poop fest, he uses the word disaster, but I know he meant poop fest. Do you think Apple is more likely to keep OS 10 a true desktop laptop OS?
They've already said that they don't want any interest in hybridizing the desktop operating system. They want to take great ideas like power management and a cleaner interface from iOS, but they never want to give someone a confusing choice between an iPad and a MacBook Air. So I don't think that. I think we'll see a lot of a big redesign, but I don't think we'll see anything that is as aggressive as Windows 8.
Is it doing them in order automatically? Do
yep.
I have to?
No, it's reordered them. It's just that you've gotten rid of all the most asked ones, and now these are only evening.
No, one more then. Yep. This is for Andy Hanatko from Jay-Z in the United States of America. Andy, would you ever consider hosting your own comic photo tech show on Twitch? You already do one.
I do one on the 5x5 network, an Anatko Almanac. Also, we're bringing back old tech news where I do sort of audiobook versions of my tech writings for Chicago Sun-Times and elsewhere. But to answer your question directly, anytime, you know, my sword and my shield are always available to Twit whenever they want to call upon them for any show that they would like me to do or even just guest on every now and then.
To be fair, Andy did come to us and say, I'd like to do an Anatko's Almanac. He gave us right of first refusal, even though it's not in your contract.
Right.
And we said, no, hell no.
Okay, hold for editing. Do you want to change that to a little bit?
No. I foolishly probably said, you know, I think that we've done some geek culture stuff. It hasn't done all that well. It's fine with me if you want to do it with Dan over at 5x5. That seems like a very good place for you to do it. And it has done very well at 5x5.
Yep, we just did our 100th episode, and after 100 episodes, I think I figured out how to do that. So hopefully the next ones will be even better.
Last question, and I tell you why. It comes from somebody named Lisa in Petaluma, California.
Who could that be?
Can Renee explain what is behind him on the shelf? Have we ever done that? Have we ever done a tour of the shelf? Bit by bit.
Yeah, so we have a Lego Batman Arkham Asylum.
Yeah, we saw you build that.
Original iPad Mini, bunch of Canon photo equipment, original Apple TV and the second generation Apple TV. All the iPhones with a bunch of Steve Jobs avatars. I don't know what the right word is. A bunch of Nokia and Palm and BlackBerry and Android devices. Cheese grater Mac. And the rest is not finished yet.
I just want to reach up to that top shelf and tap that first iPod box on the immediate right to see all of them just sort of domino over. That's all I want to do.
And I had an X-Men number one up there, but it kept falling down. So I
do
took
you,
it down.
Do you dust before the show as I cleaned the house before the cleaning lady?
I Swiffer as vigorously as I possibly can.
not a wet Swiffer, I hope. A dry Swiffer.
Yes.
You know, Kat Schwartz, a woman I used to work with on Call for Help, she was one of our producers at Tech TV, swore that she invented the Swiffer and never got a penny for it. She was in a meeting, I guess, in the company that invented it, whoever it is. And she said, you know what we need? What the world really needs is a rag attached to a piece of plastic attached to a pole that you could dust with. And the Swiffer was born.
They went, that's an excellent idea.
Can I thank Lisa and Petaluma for that wonderful question?
Scorched earth, Leo. She should go scorched earth on this one.
She should. We're going to take a break. When we come back, ready your picks of the week, my friends. It is time. You know who was here yesterday? I really had fun meeting with him is the team from 99 Designs. We love 99 Designs. These guys help businesses who are looking for logos, menus, landing pages on Facebook, you know, any kind of branding to help them really look great. We do our T-shirt designs there, and we love 99 Designs. Quality, affordable designs from a gigantic community of designers, almost 300,000 graphic designers now at 99designs.com. It's so important that you have a brand that works. We got an email from a pastor at the East Point Church in Ohio. Lisa forwarded it on to me and to 99 Designs. It was really cool. And I know Pastor Chadwick watches. He heard us talking about it, and he said, I think it's time for a new logo for the church. And he had ideas, you know, about what he wanted. So what he did is he made a contest. That's what they call them, design contests, on 99 Designs. Within days, they had over 100 logo options to look through. He says, we took about a month to go through the options to choose our winning design. Designer got paid. East Point Church got a fantastic new logo. He says it was a logo that respected our heritage but was fresh and modern. Pastor Chadwick, thank you for sending that email along. He writes, quote, thanks to MacBreak Weekly and 99 Designs for helping our church move into the 21st century with a great-looking design. It's a great way to get high-quality graphic design at an affordable price. Thank you, Pastor Chadwick, and thank you, 99 Designs. Great designers from all over the world await you. I want you to visit 99designs.com/MBW. You will automatically get a $99 power pack of services free. It gives you more designer time and attention. They'll bold, highlight, and feature your design project in the 99 Designs marketplace. That way you get nearly twice as many designs. Look how close they are to 300,000 designers. 299,512 designers. If we could get just 488 more designers in there, by next week they will have it. Designers love 99 Designs. It's a chance for them to work and make money and have fun. You see that 99 Designs has paid out. What is it? It says at the bottom what they've paid out so far. Where is it? There it is. Last month, $2 million in payouts. $74 million payouts to date. 99designs.com/MBW. Everybody wins at 99 Designs. Especially you when you get that power pack of savings for free.
Andy Anako, your pick of the week, my friend.
I got a quick one and a little longer one. This one, the quick one is this thing I just started getting into a couple of weeks ago. This is just any brand of silicone tape. It's the most, it's one of those things you keep it around the house, you keep it around like the garage, and you will find uses for it. It's just pure silicone and it sticks
to
only itself.
How is it different from electrician's tape? What is it? I don't understand.
Well, because
what
it has no adhesive. So it only sticks to itself. It won't stick to the thing that you're wrapping it around, which means that if you've got a tangle of cables underneath your desk and you just want to take these four cords and make them into one cord, you can quickly do a couple of wraps, one, two, three, four around it. And not only will it just stay together pretty much for life, but as soon as you cut it off, it will just pop right off and not leave any residue behind. They're great for repairing cables. Like if you've got like those older iOS cables that get brittle with heat and now there's kind of a break in it, you can easily just wrap it and heal it up again. It'll stick to itself and not to anything else, so it's not like electrical tape where it's going to cause this gummy mess. And also there's it's heat proof up to 500 degrees and it's freeze proof down to minus something. So like if you have this in the glove box of your car and you bust a hose or something like this, you can fix it right there by the side of the road, and it's not just we can limp along, but you can probably get home or get to your garage on it, so long as you replace whatever coolant that you lost at the time. It's good for wrapping handles of things to make actually good handles. I repaired my snow shovel before putting it away. Oh God, now we're going to definitely get
what
snow
brand
next week,
but yes. What brand? Because you're showing extreme tape.
This is 3M. Makes it, a whole bunch of other people make it. This brand is cheaper than probably you'll find from 3M. Also, you can get it at Home Depot. It's like $6 for a roll.
And I don't get out of my chair, so I'm going to order it on Amazon.
Exactly. So, I mean, it says good from minus 60 degrees Fahrenheit to plus 500 degrees Fahrenheit.
Okay.
Permanent air and watertight seal. Insulates to 400 volts. So, like I said, if there's any time where I've got like a busted washing machine hose in here, I don't want to. The reason why I definitely bought this was because I thought about this and I read all the recommendations of it. I knew that if I ever have an emergency with the washing machine or the dishwasher and I'm struggling to prevent a flood, I'll be thinking, you know, now would be a good time to be able to reach into that kitchen drawer and pull out this tape that someone recommended to me 4 weeks ago that could have solved this problem immediately. But no, you decided to maybe not. Okay, $6, good, whatever. It's on that list of tools where buy it, have it around, you will find uses for it. Because this is now the third roll that I bought, because I bought one to play with, and now I bought a second roll to have on the first floor of the house and a third roll to have inside the car, because again, I've got a high mileage car. It runs great, but I'm sure that at some point it's going to say, it's going to go Bluesmobile on me and say, yeah, I've had a good run, but I'm going to go to Jesus right now. And this will at least help me get home instead of getting a 50-mile tow back to the garage.
I buy all the other crap you come up with. I still have like four rolls of Velcro twist table cable ties that I just love this stuff.
Exactly. It's like there's always like five or six of them like in just permanently inside like my rollaway bag because it's the only way to keep anything in order is to have lots of these handy.
I'm buying three rolls right now.
There you go. The other quick thing is that an update to a recommendation I probably made, I think, last year. Ulysses is a text editor for Mac OS. It's a markdown editor. They've just updated to 1.2 and added a whole bunch of really nice new features that make it easy to manage a multiple document project. There are a lot of simple, plain markdown editors. Not all. Ulysses is probably the only one of those that is really good at organizing projects that are spread across several files, which is what pretty much anything you're doing. If you're writing a book project or a novel or a lot of things for different websites, it's the only way to keep these things organized. There are a bunch of really good features, but the really good reason for recommending Ulysses is that right now there are only three really good solutions if you want to use an iPad and a Mac as your writing tool and be able to switch effortlessly between those two. One is iWork. The other is Microsoft Office right now. Ulysses is the other one because they have the same maker of this app has a companion app called Daedalus that brings over about 85 to 90% of the features of Ulysses. And if you're using iCloud or Dropbox for syncing, you can just walk away from your Mac, pick up your iPad, and all of your documents and all your projects are right where you left them and how you left them. And it is a plain text editor, but it really does embrace the markdown spirit. So it can spit out really nicely formatted documents in whatever format you want. One of the new features of 1.2 is a styles library. So after you've done this in plain text and markdown, no matter how you want to make it look, you don't have to necessarily roll your own. You can basically go to this little style gallery that's being contributed to by lots of different people and select how you'd like this document to finally work. And you can also just drag and drop DocX files right into it to continue on your editing. So it's a $45, I think it's about $45, it like $40.
$44.95.
So it's not necessarily cheap, but it's certainly well worth its load for a Mac OS app. And until Scrivener becomes available for iOS, and that project is continuing onward. This is going to be one of the three really great ways to transition to basically have it not matter whether you're using a Mac or an iPad at any given moment, because the iPad really is a great, great writing tool. It's not great at every single thing you might use a notebook for, but it is a superlative writing tool. So
I think Alex Lindsay is going to like Renee Ritchie's pick of the week. Renee?
So this exploded on my Twitter stream this morning, and it's always funny because geeks have bought every single coffee-making implement they can, so the new geek thing is sous vide machines.
Several
really interesting ones. This is a second-generation one from Innova, and it fixes a lot of things that were wrong with the first one, but it also adds iPhone connectivity. So no longer do humans like me have to screw up our steaks. Now that you just pick what you want to cook, and it'll cook for you.
So, okay, what is...
It gives me an idea for another product.
Alex is a big sous vide guy.
Sous vide, it's just a fancy term for precision immersion cooking. So you're putting your food into water that is carefully temperature controlled and then heating it at precisely that temperature for usually a long period of time.
And the temperature is very low, we should point out.
No, it's not always very low. I mean, it just depends on what you want to do with it. So... the main thing is that it keeps the temperature within typically 0.1 degrees for any period of time. But really, plus or minus 1 or 2 degrees wouldn't matter for most things.
So you're buying what? You're buying this tube that you put in a pot?
Yes.
And it's circular. It's basically pushing the water around.
And then you use a giant alligator clip to clip a Ziploc bag.
That's a great idea.
And then... you put meat in there. This is, by the way, incredibly dangerous. The United States Department of Agriculture is going to come down on you.
Putting meat in plastic.
Put an egg in there, Leo.
Because we don't ever buy any meat with plastic.
Okay. Anyway, you're cooking it at, what, like 102 degrees?
No, 132. Oh,
it's 132.
It's so meat-safe temperatures.
No, it's not meat-safe temperatures.
132 degrees is the minimum. That is rare. So you can do 100. If you decide you want it well done, make it 150. You know, you can make it whatever you want.
But you're not cooking at a temperature that kills bacteria.
Yeah, you are, 132 degrees brings it to the temperature that would kill everything in it.
Okay.
Absolutely.
It is prion safe. You will not be getting any Danny Crane style mad cow.
There'll be no mad cow in my
absolutely.
Meat. Okay.
And you can buy immersion cookers that are the whole thing. There's another one that was on Kickstarter
recently. They're
much
more expensive.
$400, $500.
Right.
This was available for $99, but that price went, I think, by the time it took me to write about it, that price was gone. I got in at the $120 mark, I think, and they have a couple gradations of early bird specials.
What do you think? Anova is, Alex, what do you use?
I have a sous vide. It's like a sous vide supreme or whatever. It's a box.
This is a very competitive thing. These Anova people are local kind of couple, right? That just
an iPhone connected, Leo.
That's kind of a selling point, isn't it?
No, I think this is I'm definitely going to get one.
Because I use the iGrill, same thing. Where it keeps track of your grill temperature.
It does only ship in October, though. It's the one thing to remember.
So the thing about this is that a lot of times, if you're doing kind of a get together or you're doing a larger thing, you want to actually have multiple of these, and it's much nicer. I don't want to really have.
You want more than one?
Yeah, because here's why: your chicken is at one thing, and your beef is at another, and your fish is at another. It depends on what you want to do with it. So if you, for instance, what happens is if you take let's say a tri-tip. And you put it into a sous vide cooker, it'll be cooked in an hour or two.
Oh, okay.
But the longer you leave it in, it just simply continues to break down the toughness of it. So what you end up with, you leave it there for 2 days, which I've done, and you end up with something that has the consistency it has the taste of tri-tip with the consistency of filet mignon. And so it's a, and then you just fry it a little on the outside and you're done. What's really cool about it when you're hosting people at your house is that everything is cooked and just waiting because time is not a precise thing. So you get all your meat to where you want it. You leave it all there. Then you let your wife take as long as she's going to take to make the vegetables, which is my wife is not very fast.
You don't make vegetables
sous vide. She makes incredible vegetables. It's just not fast.
Not sous vide, though.
No, I could, but the problem is
sous vide primarily for meat?
No. You can do vegetables. You can do eggs. I do eggs. Yep. Sous vide soft-boiled eggs is amazing because it's just perfect every time. It's exactly the same every time.
How long does it take to cook an egg?
15 minutes, 10 minutes. But what happens is you're getting ready for your shower. You just drop them in because it doesn't matter how long.
And what temperature do you cook the egg at?
I cook it at 64 degrees Celsius. I don't know what that is. But anyway, so it's like 160 degrees or something like that. So, but the main thing is you have a bunch of people coming over. And when they all get there, when you're all ready to go and you want to eat, you're not, you don't have the time. An hour and a half broil. You just literally pull it out, throw it into either a broiler on a pan or in a barbecue, and it's done and ready to go. It's a great product. And the fact that it's iPhone. But anyway, I've been thinking about making them. I'm not going to make them if they're $160.
Right.
You know, I'm just
so there's a number of companies doing these.
Yeah.
So sous vide is spelled SOUSVIDE. And all three of these guys have been on Kickstarter. So it's kind of
interesting. But I think this is probably the only one that does iPhone, which for me would be the kicker.
That's kind of interesting.
I think the $500 one does iPhone too, but that's also brand new.
Yeah.
But it's drawing 800 watts. Is that every time it's actually cooking something?
That would be an awful lot.
Well, I think that typically what's happening, it's not leaving
800 watts.
It's not leaving it on the whole time. What it's doing is it turns on and off.
Yeah.
So once it gets to temperature, now the thing is that it will stay at temperature and it'll be much more efficient if you put it in something that's much more insulated because it's just measuring the water and adding it. So the advantage of the cooker that I have is that it's very well insulated. So it doesn't, once it gets the water to that temperature, it doesn't, you know, have to do
a
lot.
Might be
a
reason to get something like that as opposed to something like this, which is just really a.
Right.
A prong you put in your.
It's exactly what Suzanne Llewellyn, who works, he's our office manager, and her husband Tom Anderson and I were talking about building one of these, and it's pretty much what we had planned.
I know a bunch of people who have these, and they absolutely love them to the extent that now they are cooking way more aggressively than they ever did because it's the chainsaw principle. Let's see if it'll cut this now. And so they're trying to see what they can actually cook in these things.
Right.
I'm just glad, as a bachelor, I'm just glad to see that boiling the bag dinners are finally getting credibility they deserve.
And thanks to PC Guy 88, the food safe minimum cooking temperatures from foodsafety.gov for ground meat and meat mixtures, beef, pork, veal, lamb, turkey, or chicken is 160 degrees.
That's great, but I mean, if you ask for a rare, if you ask for a rare beef, it, I understand. It's 132 degrees.
I don't want anybody to die because they heard this show.
Right, right. There you go.
Anova is the product, A-N-O-V-A, on Kickstarter, if you would like to bid. And remember, all bids on Kickstarter at your own risk. And now, Alex Lindsay's pick of the week.
I'd like to pick an app into the future.
Okay.
It's a replacement for Twist. What happened to Twist?
What do you mean Twist? It's still here.
No, they died.
What?
Died.
Yeah. Well, now there's Glimpse.
It's not very good.
No, you, it's not the same
You prefer
thing.
Twist to Glimpse?
By a long shot.
Absolutely.
Well, why did Twist die then?
We don't know. They didn't charge anything. What were they? What was the business model? I think they didn't have a business model.
I talked to one of the developers, and they would not go into detail as to what actually went wrong, except to confirm that yes, this is an ex-parrot. It's rung down the curtain.
So the idea of these apps, Glimpse and Twist, is that when you're late,
late. So for a long time, we had. All I'm saying is that Glimpse isn't the solution. And Twist was not the perfect solution, but a great solution. What we did is for everybody on our crew, we expected about an hour before an event for you to twist us. And so we just knew where you were. You know, like we knew, are you
and
coming?
It creates a live map that your phone updates as you move closer to the event.
So if I want to know where Joe is, I know exactly where he is. He's stuck in traffic right here, or he's, you know, now at the
Google have some sort of similar functionality?
The win is not simply tracking, because a lot of apps do that. For me, the unique win of Twist was that all you have to do is when you set out, you say, tell this person that I'm on my way, and then it will immediately text them your ETA, not when you first create the twist, but when you first start moving. Right. So if you're still in your car, and will not update them unless there is a change to your ETA. So if you're stuck in traffic or if you stop to pick up your dry cleaning, it will automatically without any interference from you. So you don't have to do anything, and the recipient doesn't have to do anything.
This is what Glimpse with the Y does, though.
No, it just doesn't do it very well. It's just cumbersome. And all of everyone on our company is like, oh, I can't. They're all using Glimpse now, and they're all like, this sucks. You know, so anyway, right. Sorry. So
you want somebody to come along and create another twist, even though the company went out of business?
It's because they didn't charge anything. I literally would have paid $10 per app for everyone in my company to have this app.
I feel like this is built into something.
Can I say though that I've talked to a lot of developers. Like developers who are just socially, and we're all talking about, oh God, too bad Twist is dead because we all loved it. And there a conversation three times now, conversations I've brought up, you know, we should do an app like Twist because we just want that app back now. Right. It shouldn't be too hard to do.
Maybe we should do it. You've been trying to tell us about something that
you're using instead, or that.
I think Windows Phone does that. All right. I'm going to wrap this sucker up because we got to get going. Hey, thank you very much, all of you, for your fabulous contributions today. Thank you especially, Alex Lindsay, for your Q&A.
It's kind of fun.
App. I think it added immensely to the show. We'll continue to use it as long as you let us.
I have a feeling this
is free until we get hooked.
Well, you're the first one. We're
first
just trying to test it.
Until the government agency that Alex has been working for shuts it down and says that as terms of your contract, we now own this.
We're just trying to figure it out right now.
Alex is at pixelcore.com. I don't know why I tell you this, but he is.
By the way, tomorrow, Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard, we're going to use this question app, but I'm going to do a class in Rwanda on green screen. But I am going to include everybody. So we're going to stream it to YouTube and we're going to put it into the question engine. So if you want to learn about green screen tomorrow at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard, sorry, it's in the morning, but it's like multi-camera. It's not like me sitting there on my computer talking about green screen. I'm going to be walking around. I'm going to be showing stuff. It's us experimenting with a new classroom format.
Good.
So, if you want to do that, come and join us and
ask
questions.
How do you follow Alex Lindsay on Twitter?
Yeah, follow me on Twitter. I meant to put it up, but it'll be come back to me in 1 second. I'll have a
at Alex Lindsay on Twitter. Mr. Andy Yannakos at the Chicago Sun-Times, the host, as you've heard, of many shows on other networks. And he's close friends with Obi Bob Ben Newhart.
I got a tweet back from ILM saying, "Look, glad you liked it." So I didn't know did they make the because these robes are perfect, and so I took a chance and said, "Well, I'll send you my measurements if you want them." But no.
You should have Jedi Master robes. I think you should.
Speaking of which, Alex, I'm glad that you held firm and did not answer the question about what you or your company may or may not be doing to work on the new Star Wars films. So, we respect your decision not to answer that question.
No comment.
Really?
Exactly.
I said was no comment. I don't know yet.
I think it's wonderful that there are social conventions that you can actually answer
Alex,
the question without so breaking any confidentiality.
Worked, personally worked on episode one. We all know that.
That's
much.
Correct. Mm-hmm. This is how rumors are very effectively started.
Yeah, I know that, Alex. I know that very well, Alex. Why do you think I'm doing this, Alex?
Andy, can you put that up on Secret so we can blog it, please?
Exactly.
And Mr. Rene Ritchie, imore.com, the place to go. You want to keep up on this stuff. They really do a good job. imore.com. Thanks for being here, Rene.
Thank you, Leo.
Okay, Alex. He still can't do it. He's trying to do it. He's trying to set it up. Just, you know what? Follow him on Twitter. Alex Lindsay, AlexLindsay. That's the one thing that might trip you.
There you go.
That's it.
It'll be on and Twitter. I'll post it. I'll tweet it out.
Or Google Plus. You still do that?
I do Google Plus. Yeah. I'll post it in both places today.
I want to thank everybody for joining us. We do Mac Break Weekly if Leo shows up on time, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC on twit.tv. You can watch live, but if not, if you want it to begin precisely on time, merely download a copy to your device and start it whenever you wish. You'll find copies at twit.tv/MBW. You'll find it on Stitcher. You'll find it on iTunes. You'll find it wherever podcasts are aggregated and displayed for your consumption at a later date, not in violation of any existing patents. We'll see you next time. Now get back to work, because you know what? Oh, you know what? Back to work. That's Merlin Mann's show. I've been plugging Merlin Mann's show for the last 400 episodes.
Prior art.
Now get back to work, because you know what? Break time's over.